this paper that came out last month with that I wrote with Charlotte Christiansen, Ara Martirosyan, and Marta Oselli. So the plan of my talk is this one. I will start with some motivation and some introduction. I will review a lot of things that I will need for the rest of the talk. And after, I will present these two computations. So the first one is a computation in the gauge theory side. And we get a determinant representation for the three-point function of three general operators. And after, I will move to some semi-classical computation, both on the string and the gauge theory side, and I will conclude. So let me start with some motivation. So we know that in order to compute endpoint correlation functions in conformal field theories, we need a much smaller set of data, namely the conformal dimension of the operators and the three-point Strachan constant. So conformal symmetry fixes completely the spatial dependence of two and three-point functions. And this Strachan constant coefficient is precisely the coefficient that enters in the OPE of this operator. So by this by using this relation, we can, in principle, reconstruct all the higher point correlation functions. So the conformal dimension of the operators are not really extracted from two-point functions, but they are extracted as eigenvalue of the dilatation operator. But for the moment, I will just say that this problem is essentially solved by using integrability, and I will come back to this problem later. So the aim of my talk is to consider some a computation for this object, actually for the planar part of this object, and I will say more later. So this maybe is a redundant slide, but I want to just set some notation. So this is the ADS5 CFT4 correspondence. It's the first example of the ADS-CFT correspondence. On the gravity side, we have a type 2B string theory on ADS5 cross S5. The metric of this space in Poincaré coordinate is given by this. So the first part is the ADS5 part, and the second part is the sphere, the S5 part. And the parameters of the theory are related to the Toft coupling in this way. So the thing that I want to stress is the fact that in this case, we have that the radius of the ADS5 is precisely the same of the radius of this sphere. On the conformal theory side, we have n equal to 4 Supergian Mills in 4 dimension, and the field content of this theory is a gauge field, 4 fermions and 6 colors, and they transform in the adjoint representation of SUN, which is the gauge group of the theory. And for for this talk, I will restrict to the scalar sector of the theory. So I will consider mostly these 6 scalars. And the parameters of the theory are related to the Toft coupling in this way. And the most important thing is that by using the DS-CFT correspondence, it's possible to relate single string states of energy delta to single trace operators of conformal dimension delta. Also, in the ADS-CFT, helps us in computing correlation functions. So the main statement is this one, where the left-hand side is the ADS part, and the right-hand side is the CFT one. So we see that the boundary value of a scalar field determines essentially the value of the correlation function. So we have, this is the boundary value of a scalar field. And this is acts as a source, as a current on the gauge side. And in order to compute correlation functions, we have to take derivatives with respect to this phi 0 and set this derivative to 0. So the main point is that these infinitesimal changes in the boundary condition of a scalar field on ADS is precisely correspondent to the insertion of an operator on the field theory side. Actually, this relation is not really used as it is, because in principle here one should consider the generating function of the whole string theory in ADS5 cross S5, but usually it's used in the supergravity approximation, when this supergravity approximation is the essentially the saddle point of this procedure. So in this way, many correlation functions are, have been computed. So now I will review something about integrability. So integrability is, I mean, it helps in computing the anomalous dimension of the operators. So let me sketch a bit how it works. So we consider our six scalars in the n equal to 4. And we group these scalars in three complex scalars, namely x, y, and z in this way. Now I will restrict to the SU2 sector. So I just consider two of them, namely x and z, in this way. And in order to have an operator, one has to consider like a combination of z and x. And to make it gauge invariant, one put this trace. So this is a gauge invariant operator in the SU2 sector of n equal to 4. So Minan and Zarembo was shown that there is a correspondence between these operators and the configuration of SU2 spin chain. It's enough that we think like to the z field as being, for example, spin up and the x field to be spin down. So this is precisely a configuration of spins. And there is this very important thing that we can express the dilatation operator in terms of the operator acting on a spin chain. So we can write this mixing matrix in this way, where I is the identity operator and P is the permutation operator. So these are all like objects that we encounter in the spin chain approach. So now what we have done, we have translated the fact of computing eigenvalues and eigenfunction of this dilatation operator to the fact of computing eigenfunctions and eigenvalue of this H hat. So how to do that? So there are some methods to do that. I will sketch a bit how to do with the algebraic, but the answers. So the idea is that we can rewrite this object, so essentially the H hat, in terms of a derivative of the logarithm of a transfer matrix by using a Taylor expansion. And so now again, we translate the fact of computing this eigenvector and eigenfunction to the transfer matrix, to this new object that we introduced. And by using the property of the transfer matrix, I will be more clear later, we can extract some operators that we can call creation operators that by acting on a reference state, that is a kind of a vacuum state with all spin up or down, we can construct all the possible states. But in order for these states to be eigenstates of this TU, the spectral parameter, this U that I introduced here, should satisfy beta equations. So there are some key points on this way of thinking. One is that we are obliged to introduce the auxiliary space, which is, as the name says, an additional space, which is isomorphic to the physical vector space. And the transfer matrix actually acts on the physical space because it's like defined to be as a trace on the auxiliary space. Another thing is the R matrix. The R matrix is the building block of this theory, and it acts on the tensor product of the physical space and of the auxiliary space. And it obeys unitarity, crossing symmetry, and the Jahn-Baxter equation. Another thing that I want to stress is the fact that if we have transfer matrix with two different spectral parameters, they commute. So this means that the transfer matrix is the generating function of all the conserved charges. Now, just to make it more concrete, so the expression for the R matrix is this one, and it satisfies the usual Jahn-Baxter algebra. And we can write this object that is called monotropy matrix in this way. So the important part is that we can write the monotropy matrix in this form, in this matrix form, where this object B and C are precisely these operators that I was saying before, like that we can extract from this transfer matrix some particular operator, and then we will see later how this two operator works. And if we take the trace over the auxiliary space of this object, we can construct the transfer matrix. So now I will move, so this works for two-point functions. Now I will move to the computation of three-point functions. So before starting, I want to make this classification of the operators, even if it's not really precise, but it's very useful to classify three-point functions. So first of all, we can think to every operator when to this operator when the anomalous dimension scales as root of lambda at strong coupling, and they are dual to classical string states. While on the gauge side, we can think to operator that are long and have a huge number of excitations, a big number of excitations. While light operators are the one when the conformal dimension scales as one, these are protected from quantum correction, so the scaling dimension is the same with Sedgwick coupling, and they are dual to supergravity modes. So in the IS5 CFT4, it's known how to compute correlators of three light operators, both at weak coupling and at strong coupling. So at weak coupling, people have done perturbative computation, and at strong coupling, we use some supergravity fluctuation. So people compute these two objects, and they actually agree the computation is strong and weak coupling. And the next step would be to compute these correlators of heavy operators. But the point is that these correlators are much more involved, because at weak coupling, the combinatorial problem is very hard to do. And also at strong coupling, the problem is hard, because one has to solve string equation of motion with the topology of a sphere with three punctures. So this is a big problem, and people start solving this. But before doing that, I want to ask two questions. Like, the first one is, are there simple cases? And do we have some methods like integrability that I already introduced to try to analyze this problem? And indeed, the answer is yes to both questions. And I will first start reviewing the simpler case, which is this one, where we have two heavy operators and one light. So the idea actually is very simple. We can construct a two-point function of these two heavy operator and think to the insertion of this light operator as a perturbation to this two-point function. So how it works? So this is a formalism used for computing correlation function of Wilson loop. So we can think to this W to be a non-local operator, which is built of these two heavy operators. And this O I is the local operator, which is dual to this supergravity mode. So we can use precisely this DDSCFT prescription to compute these correlators. And the key point is that when we put here the string action, in the metric we can write our metric, like the full metric of ADS5 cross S5 plus a small perturbation. And this small perturbation precisely depends on the local operator that we are going to insert. So now I want to go to the other problem. So if we can use some technique that we already know in order to compute three-point functions. So Scobedo, Gromov, Severa, and Viera proposed a very nice way of doing that. So what we can do, we can map our operator to closed spin chain states in this way. And after, we can think to break these spin chains into open sub-spin chains that we can call left and right. And after, like, write our initial spin chain as a tensor product of the two open sub-spin chain. And after, what we need to do is we need to find a way of represent the weak contraction operation. And the key point is to use this flipping procedure that allows us to mimic this weak contraction. And after doing that, this flipping operation consists of transforming one cat into a bra. And on this way, we can write our correlation function. as a sum over all the possible ways that we have to cut the tree operator of this series of scalar products. So the nice thing is that we, instead of computing a correlation function, we have to compute a series of scalar products. So now we can think to this case, for example, where we have three operators. This is the vacuum field, where this means that we have L1 minus N1 Z field here, and then one X here, and the same for O2 and O3, but here we have Z bar, X bar, Z and X bar. First of all, we can see from this column that N3 plus N2 should be equal to N1 in order to have a well-defined planar three-point function. And another thing is that if we look to O3 and we see the Z, I mean, O3 contains L3 minus N3 Zs, and these Zs are obliged to contract with these Z bars. So this means that we have to put all the Zs into a sub-spin chain. And this, all the Zs should contract with some Z bars of O2. So this means that this kind of scalar product is trivial, and this gives one. So in this way, by using this fact and this fact, we see that two sums in the equation that I showed before disappear. So it remains just one sum over, so we have just one freedom to cut one of the three operators. So now I want to use this algebraic Betti-Ansatz technique in order to evaluate this scalar product. So let me start from these operators. So if we have a reference state, for example, a state like that with all spin up, in order to build an operator, we have to act with this B operator that I showed before in the monodromy matrix in order to flip one spin. For example, this means just that, so if we have B acting on a state like that, B U1, this just gives something like that. So this is what this this first thing means, and this gives this result. After, we have to act with other N1 minus 1 Bs, and we obtain this state. So now the key point of this procedure is to try to understand what this flipping operation does in this spin chain approach. So what it does, we can call this state initial state, and we can call these two final states. So while in this state we act with Bs in order to flip the spins, on these two final states we act with Cs. So we do essentially the same thing. We start with a reference state and we act with Cs. So imagine that I have that N2 is equal to 2 and N3 is equal to 4. We can do the same and we obtain these two objects. And this is our operator. So the thing that I want to note is that in this picture, that this is this O1 is not cut. So we can consider the whole state, while these two are two sub-spin chains. So namely, these two objects. So now the nice idea of FODA was to translate this computation of scalar products in this six-vertex model approach. So this is what is called six-vertex model. So this is a statistical mechanical model. And this vertex, each vertex is associated to an entry of the R matrix. And the weight of each vertex is precisely this entry of the R matrix. And it depends on the configuration of these four arrows that enter in the vertex. And all these lines, these horizontal lines, are precisely the monodromy matrix elements. So for example, the first six lines here are the six B operators that we have before. And these are, because these lines are on the, they point in these directions, while these four are C lines, and also these two are C lines. So we can map this picture on this thick perfect model, and the computation of this scalar product, this kind of scalar product, can be written in terms of object coming from this six vertex model. And essentially what we can do, we can write our three-point functions in terms of this partition function and this scalar product, this Slavonov scalar product. So this partition function is precisely this piece that takes into account the fact, I mean, there is a procedure for which we can like freeze some of these vertices. And so this should be a square in principle, but we can freeze all these vertex. And we obtain this object, which is our partition function that depends just on this wi, this entry, which is precisely the third operator, the entry on the third operator. And this is the scalar product. So let's notice that this S is precisely, so here we have four, which is this four is precisely entry, spin pointing down. And here we have two spin pointing up, which is precisely what this Slavonov scalar product means in this picture. So we can rewrite our three-point function in terms of these two objects coming from the six vertex model. So now this was a review of what was done for the n equal to 4 in the ADS 5 CFT4 correspondence. Now what we did in the ADS 4 CFT3, we compute two objects. So first of all, we start by looking at operators belonging to the SU2 cross SU2 sector of ABJM. And first, we generalize this determinant representation that I showed before, this FOD approach, to the case of this three-point function. And the second thing that we did was to do this semi-classical computation, the first that I did, this heavy, heavy light computation, for both on the string and on the gauge theory side. And we compare these two results in the Frolov's Seidel limit. So let's, yes?
I have a naive question about this kind of FOD that you have shown.
Yes.
I don't understand why.
Oh, sorry.
The scalar product should be zero, is the number of magnon are different, yeah? M1 and M2.
Why? Is
there a lot of analogy between these states? This is a scalar product between on-shell beta states?
No, in this case, you just one of the three object should be a beta state, like if the operator that you don't cut, the spin chain that you don't cut, this should be a beta state. The other two can be whatever.
Okay, and in this case there is no condition on the number of magnets?
Yes, the condition is precisely the same that I showed before, that N3 should be equal to N1 plus N2 because of this. Because of this, sorry, N1 should be equal to N2 plus N3. Because otherwise you cannot really contract the operator, you don't have any other choices. But this is a kind of, it's not what you call scalar product in the sense that this object, I can go a bit fast on, I put some definition. So this scalar product is this object. So it's defined as this product of C operators, like you go from 1 to N2 and you act with C operators, and you go from 1 to N1 and you act with B operators with to these two states. So this is a state, the one that I was underlining, that you have N3 spin on one direction and L minus N3 on the other. And in this case, you have all spin up.
Okay, so you compensate the U1 charge. It's not the same vacuum on both.
No. No, because you have... No, because here you have this. So this is precisely this entry spin on one direction, and here you have the other two on the other direction. Okay. So this is a definition. So now let me start by reviewing a bit this ADS4 CFT3 correspondence. So the ADS4 CFT3 correspondence on the ADS side, we have the type 2A string theory on ADS4 times CP3, and the metric is precisely this one. So in this case, the radius of ADS is not equal to the radius of CP3, and what I call here R is precisely the radius of CP3, that is twice the radius of ADS. This will be very important for what I want to do later. And the parameters are related in this way to the top coupling. This picture is true only when K and N are both large, but for generic K, the dual theory of this n equals to 6 is M theory on ADS4 times SZ mod ZK. On the CFT side, we have n equals to 6 superconformal Church-Simons theory in three dimensions. The gauge group is this one, and this K is the Chern-Simons level, which is related to the soft coupling in this way. The bosonic field content of this theory is made of two complex colors transforming in the n times n bar, and two complex colors transforming in the n bar times n. There is a big difference between the ADS4 CFT3 correspondence and the ADS5 CFT4. That is the amount of supersymmetry that they share. This one has 24 supersymmetry, while the other one has 36. This will be also very important. So now we'll start talking about this generalization of the determinant representation. So let me introduce what these operators. Our operators are built of this form. So we are talking about scalar operators. Now this is the full ABJM theory. And so I write this as a trace. This is a tensor. And with a trace of this object, these are the multiplet of the SU4 R symmetry, which can be grouped in this way. And so this multiplet transform in the fundamental, while this other one transform in the anti-fundamental. So in this couple of scalars transform in the n times n bar representation, and these other two transform in the other representation m bar times n. The conformal dimension of the scalars is 1/2. So for example, for this kind of operator that I write here, is n, the bare dimension of the operator. So now I will restrict to the SU2 cross SU2 sector. In this sector, what we can do, we can consider this operator made of just two scalars in the ZA and two scalars in the Z bar A, which transforms into separate SU2 subgroup. So in this operator belonging to this sector are of this form. And the nice thing is that was shown by Minan and Zarembo is that the two-loop dilatation operator is the Hamiltonian of the two decoupled spin chain. And one spin chain is living on the even side, and the other spin chain is living on the odd side. And these two spin chains are just related through the momentum constraint. This is also very, very important, and it will affect our computation a lot, this theme. So now our operator can be written in this form. These are operators belonging to the SU2 cross SU2 sector. This notation means that we have J minus J1, Z1, and so on. So this is these red lines just denote the field transforming in the fundamental, and the blue line are the one transforming in the anti-fundamental. So this is a kind of pictorial way of describing this contraction between these fields. So now I will review something about...
You have a typo, no? In the picture. Colors should alternate.
The color?
The colors should alternate.
What do you mean alternate?
Should be red, blue, red, blue, red, blue, red?
Yes?
But it's not.
Yes, sorry, yes. No, it's true. We need an extra line. Yes, this is the most important thing of this picture. So now I will review a bit the integrability and in ABJM. So in the SU4, as I said, this dilatation operator is thought to be integrable. So we can introduce again our object, the R matrix and the monodromy matrix and the transfer matrix. So let me start with the R matrix. The first difference is that in this case we have four R matrices, and we can write these R matrices in this way. So let's see one thing. First of all, here I put this new parameter, because for the moment I want to be more general, in the sense that I won't consider some non-homogeneous spin chain, but at the end I will set these two parameters to one constant. So this I is the identity operator, this P is the permutation operator, and this K is the SU4 trace. And so this UO means like the spectral parameter referring to the odd spin, the spin chain on living on the odd side, and this E means the other, like the one living on the even side. And these two spaces are the vector spaces of the fundamental and of the under-fundamental representation. So this is the form of these R matrices. Now I want to specify to the SU2 cross SU2 sector. So in the SU2 cross SU2 sector, the trace operator does not contribute. So if we go back, we don't have this piece. So we can see that these two are just some trivial matrices, because they're just a combination of the identity. And these two have some form that is precisely the form that I showed you before of two R matrices of two different spin chains of the SU2 in n equal to 4, two SU2 spin chains. And the form of this R matrix is precisely like that. So let me say something. So we have these two objects that are precisely the same, and here we have two objects again equal, and these two again equal. So in total we have six non-zero objects here and six non-zero here, and these two are a 4x4 matrix, and they are proportional to the identity. So in this case we have four objects different from zero. And so this one is the R matrix of an SU2 spin chain of the n equal to 4. And this one, again, is another SU2 spin chain, where we have this, where we can rescale with this two factor, which depends at the end on these two variables. So we have two non-trivial R matrix for this problem. So now we can construct our monodromy matrix in this way. So we can just multiply these R matrices, and we can write the monodromy matrix in this form as I did before. So there is one for this pertaining the odd side, and there is another one equal but with the E subscript. And the important thing is that in this way, we have two different spin flipping operators, one pertaining the odd side and one pertaining the even side. And this will be also very important for what I want to do later. So now let me briefly summarize what I did. So we start from the four R matrices of the SU4. We zoom into the SU2 cross SU2 sector. So we see that that we have two R matrix which are proportional to the unity and to the unique matrix, and two R matrices which are the same of two and independent SU2 spin chains. And we have two lowering operators, BE and BOD, which are precisely the same of the SU2 operators. So now, as I said before, in order to construct all the states of our theory, we have to ensure that the rapidities of this U odd and U even have to satisfy these SU2 beta equations. This is precisely related to your question. So this U are the beta roots of the O1 of one operator. So this has to satisfy the beta equations. But again, the beta equation for the SU2 cross SU2 sector are two precisely copies of the SU2 equation for the n equal to 4 plus one that is the momentum constraint, which is slightly different of the one for the n equal to 4 case, because this ensures that the total momentum of the excitation should vanish. So we have to sum over all the momentum of the spin chain living on the odd and on the even side. So now I want to translate what I said in the six vertex model formalism. So in this case, we have, so as I said, there are six non-zero entries of one R matrix and six non-zero entries of and the other R matrix, which are precisely represented by the weight of these vertices. And these are the one corresponding to the identity matrix, in the sense that these four are precisely the diagonal terms of the one of the two R matrices, and these are precisely the other four of the other R matrix. So the weight of these vertices are the entries of the R matrix of the two SU2 spin chains, and these weights are all one, apart from a multiplicative factor that we can put in front.
Excuse me?
Yes?
Just terminology. Is it really named six vertex model as one in this case?
Yes, because the two have not interaction.
Oh, okay. Please.
Because the thing that made these names is the fact that you have at the end six vertex. There are other models like eight vertex or stuff like that, but they depend on the way in which you can have the arrows here. So because here the only possibilities that you have are just six.
Yeah, no, I understand, but the fact that we have now two cutouts.
Yes, but the only thing that can mix the two colors is this, but this is a kind of trivial because all the vertices have one weight, so it's precisely some decoupled thing. Because it's not some, maybe if you consider the SU4, like this is the SU2 cross SU2, but if you consider the full SU4, you have some different models maybe with more vertices. So now we can write this six vertex model corresponding to our problem, so our correlation function. So let's see, so these are the red vertices. This is a red blue vertex, this is a red blue, and so on. So in order, our partition function as Lab-Noah scalar product are precisely like a sum over all the possible configuration of the product of this weight of the vertices. So in a way, if we think like to have a partition function for this model, we have to sum over all the possible configuration of the product of these weights. So if when we do this product, we have the product of this vertex times this, but this is one, and times this one, so we can write this object as two decoupled six vertex model, and we can think and our 3-point function as the product of two objects, because this mixed vertex has weight one. And this comes precisely from the fact that two of our four R matrices are proportional to the identity. So this is the final result that we got. So if we think to the domain wall partition function, there was this Z that we have also in the n equal to 4 case. What we can do, this is the general formula, but now what we have two different B operators, one pertaining the odd side and one pertaining the even side. So we can write this product as two products, one going from 1 to J of B even, and one going from 1 of J of B odd. And also this reference state, we can think as a product like this one, but with Z1 even, Z1 odd, and so on. And also we can do the same for the Slavnov scalar product. Again, we have two C's and two different B's, and also this N2 can be written as the sum of N2 even plus N2 odd, and the same for this N1. And so we can rewrite these two objects as a product of two decoupled six vertex model. So now I want to introduce this object. This kind of trivial object is the norm of the Bethe states. So if we have a scalar product, when we set two rapidities, two sets of rapidities to be the same, we obtain the norm of the state, which we use to normalize our three-point function. So we have our three-point function as a product of this. So this is 1 SU2, n equals to 4, correlation function. This is the other. But the important thing is that we have a normalization in front. And this normalization is not a product of the two normalizations that we have in the n equals to 4, because this should take into account the fact that we have a cyclicity of the trace. But now our trace, I mean, the cyclicity is should be done in the half of the length of our operator, because we can move, we have to think as our field, like we can move like couple of fields in order to have the same trace. So here I put like half of the length of all the operators, and here I have the norms of these states. So the only thing that takes into account this factor, the momentum constraint, is given by this object, which is precisely the normalization that we have to put in front. So now I want to move to semi-classical computation. So in order to have a semi-classical computation, one has to think to two operators being much longer than the other one. And in order to simplify a bit the notation, we choose to have J1 equal to J2 equal to small j, and pick j1 equal to pick j2. And so these are our new operators. And we have to also think to this limit, because as I said before, the one and the two should be very long, but also the number of excitations should be big in order to have heavy operators. And the object that we are computing is this ratio, where this this is precisely the correlation function 2 heavy and 1 light, and this is the its counterpart, but with operator being BPS. So this is a correlation function of 3 BPS operator having the same charges of this object. So I will start with a gauge theory computation by using a coherent state approach, and that will say later about the string theory computation. So we can write our operator using a coherent using coherent states in this way. So we write one as a combination of these objects. The this notation is a bit not really fair, because we use this u for the rapidities, but this is a different object. And this O2 in this way. This bold Z means that 1 Z2, bold W, W1 and W2, Z bar is this and W bar is this. And these vectors belong to the C2 and that unit normalized. So now the important thing is that this operator are eigenstates of the two-loop dilatation operator. And this use must be periodic in P, and the period should be 2j in order to have that these two operators fulfill the equation of motion, no, that this use fulfill the equation of motion of the Landau-Lifshitz sigma model. So let me say something about the third operator. O3 is a BPS operator, and we can write this operator in this way. And the norm is this, that is precisely what I just said before for the norm of the for the normalization. So here is not precisely the product of 2 n equal to 4, but there is this factor which is different. Another thing that I want to say is that in the case of the SU2 cross SU2 sector, so in the case of in the case of this ABJM theory, three-point function of BPS operators are not protected, and they depend on decoupling. And we will see in which way they depend on decoupling. So in the n equal to 4 case, these objects were protected. So, but in this case, it's not like that. So let me see how to do this, how to compute this three-point function in the gauge side. So we can think to this object being, so if we have, this is O1, this is O2, and this is O3. So we choose a bunch of fields, like J, this is for J the length. So we have to choose a bunch of fields of length 2J and a bunch of fields of length 2J that we are going to contract with this third operator. And this K take into account the fact that we can choose this bunch of fields in every place in O1 and the same for O2. So this part, these contractions are precisely the contraction that, I mean, we can contract O1, that is this part, and O2 with O3, having this contribution, where precisely this product takes into account this fact that we can have, like, we can move this bunch of fields in the chain. And after, we have all this contraction between O1 and O2, and that this contraction can be written in this way. So note again that we have two different coherent states, one for the odd and one for the even side, and the same here. So now we can put everything together, and we write our three-point function in this way, where this entry is the normalization of the, it's the norm of the third operator. Now we have to assume that these operators are semi-classical, so that these functions are slowly varying. So we consider precisely these objects. And we say that this object obey the continuum Landau-Lipschitz equation of motion. So this is something that we take into account in this approximation. And the other thing is that O1 should be roughly the same of O2, so we can like Taylor expand this object in this way, where this correction is of order j, small j over big j, and if we do this approximation, we end up having this object, which is our result for the three-point function of the gauge theory side of two heavy operator and one light. So now, in order to compare with the string side, we need to compute the same object, but for 3 BPS. So what we did, we used our result from the gauge theory side, so the one with the two domain wall partition function and the Lapmonds scalar product, and we used the result of this paper of Kostov that in which he explained a procedure for in the n equal to 4 case to go from this determinant formalism to a kind of result for 3 chiral primaries. So we can do a limit on the general formula to get the result of 3 chiral primaries, sending all the rapidities to infinity. So we use this fact, and so we use 2 n equal to 4 result times our normalization, which is this one, which is different from the one at the n equal to 4 case. And after, so this is the result of our previous formula, the determinant of the determinant that we have from the 6 vertex model. And so we have 2 copies of that times this normalization. So we take the limit of j and j1 going to infinity, and we obtain this result, where this s is this object here. We also checked this result with a perturbative prescription that was in this paper. So it's still a combinatorial problem. So we did this, this computation was pretty easy, and we obtained the same object, this one. So So now let me move to the string side. So the string computation is the one that I told before, like of two heavy operators and one light. So the first thing that one has to do is to specify the background metric. The second thing is that we have to do a fluctuation computation. So we have to see which kind of fluctuation corresponds to our light operator. And the third thing is that we need to evaluate this fluctuation on the classical string solution. Namely, we have to build our two-point function. So let me review this, how to zoom into SU2 cross SU2 sector in this metric. So the first thing, we have to start with the type 2A string theory on this background, and we can write the metric in this form as I showed before. So the ADS side is very easy. It's almost the same of the ADS5, of course. But the important thing is that here, instead of having four coordinates, we have three coordinates. So now, in order to find the metric for the CP3 side, we have to start from the M theory on the ADS5 cross S7. And after, by making some change of coordinates, we can write our type 2A background in this way, in the SU2 cross SU2. So let me notice two things. The first thing is that we have two spheres that we can parameterize with theta and phi. And the second thing is this part that is precisely the same that one also has in the ADS5 cross S5. Another important thing is this factor. This is 1/8, which is, so here we have 1/4, and here we have 1/8 in front of 1/8 in front of the contribution from the two spheres. So this was very important. And so now what we can do, we can write down our supergravity modes corresponding to our light operator. So now I will denote this delta. This delta at the end will be 4j, small j. And these are the two fluctuations, is mu and nu refer to the coordinate of the ES4, and this alpha and beta to the coordinate of CP3. This is the path to boundary propagator. The nice thing is that we have this entry tilde, which is precisely this object. And this object takes into account the fact that now we have a different kind of normalization for the operators. And this is precisely the object that we also have in the ADS5 cross S5 case. So let me notice another thing, that here we have a lambda to the 1/4, which is completely different from the ADS5 cross S5 case. So now we can collect all these things, and we can parameterize our two sphere in a slightly different way by using, instead of these coordinates that I showed before, these two vectors, these two complex vectors UE and UO, and set this delta equal to 4j. And we can integrate in this way. So this is precisely this new factor. This is a 3 instead of a 2, I think. That's a 2, that one obtained in the other case. And this is the contribution of the CP3 side. And here we have these two that come from the fact that we have this 1/8 in front of the metric instead of the 1/4 that we have on the ADS side. This is some normalization. And this is this y that is here. So now we can integrate over tau on the time, because we can write our use in this form. And there are these two conditions. This two condition doesn't mix between the, this condition doesn't mix between E and odd. So these two are one for E and one for odd. And now we can do this Frolov-Zeitlin limit, which in our coordinates is like that. So this kappa goes to zero, and we have that this derivative, time derivative of this u, so of 1/k is fixed, and also this is fixed. This is slightly different of the Frolov-Zeitlin limit at the beginning, because in their case, this k goes to infinity. In our case, this k is 1/k. It's a kind of, it's a gate choice, so we did this choice. And in this case, we obtain
What are you saying? It's just exactly the same. You use one over k, they use k.
Yes, yes, but it's a, because when we introduce the time, it's a different, like when we choose the gauge.
There's no gauge. They use some letter k and you use one over k.
Yes, but because when we introduce our time, I mean, this comes from a definition of some time coordinate. You introduce some time, which is proportional to this k, and we use a different gauge, like 1 over k instead of k.
Okay.
It's, I think it's come from precisely from here.
K is a variable, which doesn't have any meaning until you match it with anything physical. So to use k or 1 over k is not different.
No, yes, yes, it's the same, but it enters in this, when you introduce this time.
Yeah, you just say time is proportional to time.
Yes, yes.
But the proportionality is what yes, variable yes. We want to call it.
Yes, precisely.
K, it's not a different k.
No, yes, yes. No, no, it's not a different k. It's the same k, but we use a different gauge, like with 1 over k instead of k. Like another variable. And so, if we do this, if we write this and we use the Virasoro constraint for this Landau-Lift fields, actually in this SU2 cross SU2 sector, we have two Landau-Lift fields added together plus this momentum constraint, and we obtain this object. Note that again, this depends on lambda, and this has precisely the same lambda dependence of, this is the lambda dependence coming from the bulk to boundary propagator that I showed before. So now I will do the same computation for the three BPS from the string side. So what we did, we just used this prescription that is precisely what Bastianelli and Zucchini used in order to compute this three-point function in the supergravity approximation. And we end up with this formula. We did it precisely the same limit, and we obtain this object. And now we can compare these ratios. So this is the one that we obtain in the strong coupling limit, and this is the one that we obtain in the weak coupling, and this is precisely the same. So in the SU2 cross SU2 sector, the computation normalized in this way of the strong side, it agrees precisely with the same of the weakly coupled theory, and this is precisely the same matching that was found in the case of ADS5 CFT4. So let me conclude. So what I show you was two computation of the non-extremal planar three-point functions in the SU2 cross SU2 sector of ABJM. So the first thing that I show was this generalization of the determinant expression by using these two objects from the six vertex model language. And the second thing was this semi-classical computation for this computation of two heavy and one light operators, both from the gauge and the string theory side. And now I want to say something, some outlook. So what it would be very nice to do in this picture would be to reproduce this semi-classical result that I show you, like a limit on the gauge theory expression. So as I said, in this paper of Kossoff, there is a procedure to go from the determinant expression to the case of three classical or three BPS operators. So it would be nice to extend this procedure also when two operators are heavy and one is light. Another thing that would be important is to go to higher loops and higher sector in this ABJM theory, because if we can go to higher loops, namely the first non-trivial loop is two loop, and in this case maybe one can get some insight also for the H of lambda if one tries to go from weak to strong coupling, like one can get some insight of the form on the form of this H of lambda. So thank you.
Thank you. Have computations been made for the three-point function of individuals that have monopole operators? So three-point functions of not of this trace operator, but this monopole operator.
No, for the ABJM case, there are just computation for three BPS operators by supergravity computation, the one that I showed some.
I mean, the monopole ones can be BPS.
But I think it was just for scalar operators, like operators of this form.
Mm-hmm.
And another computation was done for, in the case of this heavy light, but when the light one is not a trace operator, but it's a dilaton, it's dual to a dilaton, just from the string theory side.
So do you expect that the case with three BPS operators, it has some simple dependence on the charge times the function of lambda? What can you say about the case of three BPS? You said it's not protected, but do you expect something for its form? Any couple?
I don't know, because what we...
You get a simple dependence on J1, J2, J3 at weak and strong couples?
Yes.
So just a function of lambda that multiplies the difference?
Yes.
Do you expect that to be valid at any couple?
I don't know, because this, I mean, the maybe yes, because they all, the, for example, in the string theory side, this lambda dependence comes from the bulk to boundary propagator. This is the same at any, I mean, this is just the bulk to boundary propagator normalization. I think it's the same. But on the gauge theory side, I don't know. I'm sure that this is a kind of general thing for the string theory side. But I'm not really sure. Because maybe one can also get some other contribution on lambda from other objects.
Yeah, naively it's not obvious, but on the other hand, you know, it should not be very different from
yes.
Maybe.
Yes.
It starts at 1 at the level, doesn't start at other 1. But it would be related to 1 in a simple way.
Yes, but the problem is that going to 2 loops is a kind of hard. Like if one want to.
Oh, but even 1 loop. 2, yes, you're right.
Yes, 2 is the. So going to 2 loops is I think that the only way that one can do something is by using this 6 vertex model techniques, but also there, going to 2 loops, it's a kind of non-trivial. Maybe one can do something for the SU2 cross SU2, but I'm not sure that one can do something for the SU4 case. I mean, at least.
Thank the speaker again.